All right, so we start hour number three. Quick reset for you. Welcome to the program. I am Jim Rome. The show originates from Southern California. I'm still live in our studio. Last hour today, Scott Eastwood is an actor. He joins me in 40 Past. I've got a podcast I'm going to push out. It's the original Side Hustle, episode 136. If we've done 136, do the math. That's one a week. And 136 original, long-form, free, premium content episodes. Andre Iguodala is this week's guest, and we'll have that for you after the show. Make sure you look for that. This talk show is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Again, I would argue that people have it tougher, but going into the bubble requires a little more than, quote, having to do without tail for 3 weeks. But they will have to do without tail for a series of weeks because you're not free to come and go as you please, and people cannot just come in as they please. It is a bubble. All right, so all of that. You've got your telephone number. Use it if you want. Something I want to talk about right now quickly. This summer is also the 10th anniversary of the decision. And as a result, there's a whole lot of different retrospectives on LeBron James and how he approached it, how that decision was made, the announcement itself, and everything that surrounded it. You remember the Heatles. Remember that cheesy gloss? The Heatles. The jersey burnings. The traitor comments. All of it. I mean, it really is pretty crazy to look back on it at that time and everything that went into it and surrounded it, because there's so many different angles to that story. And some of those angles are pretty easily forgotten, such as the fact that the Knicks and the Nets thought they had a shot at getting one or two members of the eventual Big Three. Do you remember that part of it? Do you remember that part where Chicago was viewed by some as a serious contender to get the Big Three, right? Dwayne Wade had roots. They were building something. They had Derrick Rose. I mean, imagine how insane that would have been, that if they got the Big Three when they already had Derrick Rose. Can you imagine Derrick Rose, Dwayne, LeBron, and Chris Bosh all running together? It would have been nuts. But the Bulls did have a couple of issues that they had to address before they could make that happen. They needed to clear cap space. And as Brian Windhorst writes, quote, Derrick Rose, the team's young star, wasn't deeply involved in the recruiting process, end quote. Which is kind of curious to me, right? Like, if you're a young star and you're the face of that franchise, it's kind of inherent. It's kind of built in that you will do whatever you can to help the franchise. It's part of being the face of the franchise. But apparently he wanted nothing to do with that. So Chicago needed some other player to take the lead and be the voice of the Bulls players in the recruiting process because D. Rose didn't want to do it. And the guy they went with was Joakim Noah. Noah, a guy who really did not seem to like LeBron James. And a guy that LeBron James did not seem to like either. And according to Windhorst, when Noah called him as part of the recruiting process, LeBron never even called back. Yeah, I wonder why that is. I wonder if that had anything to do with the fact that Noah and LeBron had an ongoing feud on the floor. I wonder if it had anything to do with Joakim Noah saying things like this about the city of Cleveland.
You like it? You think Cleveland's cool? I mean, I never heard anybody say, I'm going to Cleveland on vacation. What's so good about Cleveland?
You're asking that guy to call a star from the state of Ohio and who was playing for the Cavaliers. You're asking him to make that call after he said that. I mean, that was, don't get it wrong, that was one of the greatest press conference moments ever. And it didn't come out of nowhere, by the way. There was another great but forgotten detail that had preceded that. Remember, this is Joakim Noah sitting down with TNT to talk about the city of Cleveland.
I don't know about this place, man. I just stayed in my hotel room, man. Every time I look out my window, it's pretty depressing out here, man. It's bad. It's bad.
So you're not going out?
No. No going out in Cleveland, man. It's all factories.
Do you regret anything?
An incredible statement. An incredible statement. Like, he starts off by saying, I don't know about this place, man. I don't know about this place. I don't leave my hotel. Every time I look out my window, it's, quote, pretty depressing. And then he chases that with, quote, it's all factories.
It's all factories.
It's all factories is an incredible line.
It's all factories.
And this is when Noah was still a great player and great personality. And he's still a great personality. But that's the guy that was charged with recruiting LeBron to the Bulls. Meanwhile, the Heat have got Pat Riley showing up. And Riley is showing up in Chicago, and he's pitching Chris Bosch. Riley was not just pitching Bosch. Riley was giving Bosch one of his championship rings. And apparently not showing him the championship ring, but giving him the championship ring. According to Windhorst, Riley met with Bosch in a conference room in a skyscraper in Chicago. And the highlight of the meeting, and Riles is amazing. The highlight of that meeting was Riles breaking out a small velvet rug, laying it across the table, and he chased that with a small velvet bag. As Bosch said, quote, "Oh yeah, Pat brought his rings out. It looked just like a Crown Royal bag. He puts it down like, boom, big boy talk." When he ended the meeting, Pat gave me a 2006 Heat championship ring. Riley said to Bosch, quote, "Take it, keep it, give it back to me when you win one," end quote. I mean, dang, Riles. That's a closer, man. That's how you close. Now you see why players, why guys, players, elite players, Hall of Fame players, arguably the GOAT, were in awe of Riley. He is the ultimate closer. This dude is so smooth. You got Joakim Noah trying to blow LeBron up on his blower, and it's going right to voicemail. And there's Riley in a high-rise in Chicago laying out a championship ring, and not just laying it out, but saying, "Hey, man, it's yours. Just take it. I got so many of these things. You don't have one yet. Go ahead and look at mine. You can wear mine. You can do whatever the hell you want with mine. You just take that. It's yours, man. It's yours. Take it. Give it back to me after you win one." You think guy's pretty certain he's going to win one if he's giving away a ring on loan? So the Heat are bringing Riley and his rings, and the Bulls are trying to get Noah to not bring the Heat. Like, "Joe, hey, Joe, listen, can you do this?" "Yeah, I'll do it. I'm good." Because D. Rose won't do it. "Yeah, I'm good. I got this. I got this. Hey, Joe, if you do talk to LeBron, can you make sure not to dump and crap all over the region he's from?" And let me be clear about this. I'm not dumping on Noah. I still love this guy. I love his attitude. I love his hustle. I love his skill. I love the fact that after he annihilated Cleveland for being, quote, all factories.
All factories.
He didn't back down. He was asked about it again, and he did not back down. In fact, he stepped up and delivered greatness. And then when he was asked about it after game two of the series, when the Bulls were down 2-0, he wasn't backing down either. No, he did step up and deliver the greatness.
"You like it? You think Cleveland's cool? I mean, I never heard anybody say, 'I'm going to Cleveland on vacation.' What's so good about Cleveland?"
And then when he was asked about all the boos and the fact that in Cleveland they were killing him, he didn't care about that either.
"Have you ever been booed as much in your life?"
"Yeah."
"When were you booed more than this?"
"I was booed a lot. My whole life I've been booed. College, I was getting booed a lot. Boston, they don't like me over there. And they don't like me over here either. It's okay. I have my friends. I don't care."
Such a good line. Such a good line. Like, "Yeah, I don't care, man. They boo me everywhere. I've got friends. I have my friends. I don't care." Again, though. Again, that was the guy who was leading the recruiting effort to get LeBron a few months later. I mean, seriously? Like, I know Chicago might not have had other options when Rose wanted nothing to do with it, but man, that is a tough pivot. A guy who's on record is killing Cleveland. A guy who doesn't get along with LeBron, and you're asking that guy to bring LeBron in. Hey, and by the way, Derek. Derek, what's up, man? What's up with you? What, was that not your job? Or was that town not big enough for the both of you? Or were you trying to save yourself for those meetings that you were going to have when you retired? Or was being the man more important than winning? Whatever it was, it worked out a hell of a lot better for Bron than you. because you left the recruiting to Noah, who gave it his best shot, but that was pretty much an impossible ask. Like, hey, LeBron, you know the place that you're from and it means so much to you? Yeah, well, it sucks. It's not cool. It's just depressing, man. It's so depressing. There's nothing but factories.
It's all factories.
And you know what? By the way, I know you don't like me, and you know I don't like you, but screw it, man. Just come to Chicago. Play with us. If you think Cleveland was pissed when LeBron went to Miami, could you imagine what they would have done if he did join up with Joe, the guy who kept smashing their city? The Jersey burnings would have lasted for years. Like, the way LeBron handled the decision was pretty much garbage.
Garbage.
But the decision itself was pretty genius.
And this fall, I'm going to take my talents to South Beach and join the Miami Heat. That was the conclusion I woke up with this morning.
Yeah, I get it. You probably shouldn't have stabbed your town in the back on live TV, but I understand why you went. But again, just the retrospective, the whole point that the Bulls wanted this guy so badly and thought they had a shot at not only him, but maybe two or three of the big three. But Derrick Rose wanted nothing to do with the recruiting, and they left Joakim Noah to do it. A guy who hates Cleveland and didn't like LeBron. That's good stuff. I like that. It's nothing but factories.
It's all factories.
No, it's not. C-Town's good, man. C-Town, you're good. You know you're good. You're good in my book. You always will be. And the Browns are still America's team. This is for you, man. The land. And ODB made it clear this week. He's not coming to New England. He has, quote, unfinished business. All right. 1-800-636-8686. Let's see here. I think I will go to Fort Worth. Matt in Fort Worth. Hey, Matt, how are you?
Hey, Romy. How's it going, brother?
Hey, Matt. It's great. How about you?
Doing good. So first off, I'd like to give a shout out to Sonny for those 2 minutes of my life I'll never get back from yesterday. Also, enough with these wash-ups like Jay Cutler. Let's talk about something real like the Patriots signing Cam Newton. And now, you know, this won't be the first time that Belichick has relied on a Cam to win the Super Bowl. However, it doesn't matter how many Cams they use. The Chiefs are running it back this year with Patty Mahomes at the helm. Let's go. Now, for the NBA, I would love to talk about the Lakers and how they need to find a way to keep JR off the court in the final minutes of the game, just like Romy keeps Rex and AB Poo out of the smack off.
That's not a good call. No.
You don't like that call.
I don't like that call.
I have nothing clever to add right now other than to say that's just not a good call. How about we talk about more than one thing at one time? Like, you, the guy says, can you not talk about Cutler? But can we talk about Cam and the Pats? I don't know. We could probably talk about both. And talk about both pretty accurately and pretty smartly. Wow, man. Try harder. In fact, don't try at all. It's not your, like, look, not all of you are built for this. I guess you got to give it a shot. There's only one way to find out, right? Try it and see how it goes. You tried that. That didn't go very well. Because just, here's the thing about this show. I know we're in a pandemic. I know there are no sports. I know there's a lot of sports talk radio that sounds like crap right now. Sounds like garbage right now. Garbage. Because there's not a whole lot to talk about. So they are reliant upon telephone calls. This show is a little bit different. If you're going to call this show, you need to be a little bit different. Because I do have things to talk about. And even if there's nothing around and nothing going on, I can still find things to talk about. I'm not reliant upon the telephone calls. I don't show up here every single day twiddling my thumbs or looking at my sidekick like, damn, what are we doing today? What are we doing today? I think I'll tell some old stories that nobody thinks are interesting. But that's not what we do. That's not who we are. That's not how this show is. I bet you could probably, if you're being really honest with yourself, you could argue that, damn, Rome, if anything, you've stepped up during the pandemic. So what I'm saying is, I'm not telling you not to call. I'm just saying not all of you can be callers on this show. It's a different show. You're held to a higher standard. You got to make it better. You got to come with something. And you don't have to agree with me or suck up to me, but you have to come with something that makes it good. What if I showed up here every single day and my takes sucked and they were flat and there was no reason to listen? That's where you callers come in. If your takes are flat and they don't make it better and they don't bring the program up, then I'm not going to take the call. I'm holding you to a standard. And by the way, if you can't deal with me, you really can't deal with the JTP and what goes on Twitter. If you can't handle the heat from me, just know it's much worse once you put that phone down or I put the hammer down. So no, I'm not trying to discourage all of you from calling, just a lot of you. Just those of you that don't have what it takes. All right. You've been told. You've been warned. When we come back, I may still lay out what Adam Silver had to say about the potential shutdown. He's still, quote, pretty confident. Not extremely confident. But that's what I like about Silver. This dude's smart. Don't paint yourself into a corner. Don't back yourself into a corner where you can't get out. He should be, quote, pretty confident, but not extremely confident. And what about the Lakers? They don't have Avery Bradley. And don't underestimate how important he is. He's really important to what they do. And they may not have Dwight Howard. So where does that leave them? I have that. I've got a conversation with Scott Eastwood as well. Stay tuned.
You're listening to The Jim Rome Show.
All right, so assuming the NFL can restart and life in the bubble works, who is the team to beat if we can actually get to that conversation? Who is the team to beat? Like, remember, in the final weekend before the NBA shut down, the Lakers look like absolute monsters. Remember that? I mean, it's a long time ago. It seems like much longer ago than it actually was. But remember, they beat the Bucks by 10 in a game where LeBron went off, 37-8-7. They did that on a Friday night. Then they came right back on Sunday, and they smashed the Clippers by 9 in what was supposed to be a Clippers home game. So I'm not sure there is such a thing as a statement weekend in early March in the NBA, but if there was such a thing, that would be it. They emphatically beat down the two teams that were their biggest threats of winning it all. But then everything shut down, and we haven't seen the Lakers on the floor for nearly 4 months. And when they do take the floor, they're not going to be the same team. We talked about Avery Bradley. That's a much bigger loss than I think a lot of you think. Dwight Howard may not be there. Also, a pretty significant loss if he's not. And J.R. Smith will be there. So they're going to be different. And now we're looking at the possibility of them spending months in a hotel away from their families. And again, that's not just a matter of them, quote, having to go 3 weeks without getting any tail. It's a pretty big ask. Like GM Rob Pelinka laid it out in a conference call with reporters. Notice he's not saying, well, you know, the hardest part about this is we're asking our guys to go without tail for 3 weeks. That's not what he said.
Have I had nights at dinner where I'll look over and my 10-year-old daughter has tears in her eyes and I ask her why and she says it's because daddy could be gone for 3.5 months? Yes. I mean, that stuff is part of this. But I think she understands the bigger picture.
Notice what he didn't say, that I sit with LeBron and I look over and LeBron has tears in his eyes because he has to go 3 weeks without tail. Notice he didn't say that. It's a big deal. So it's not just a matter of showing up in Florida and going 3 weeks without tail and picking up where you left off in March. Guys have gone months without playing together and in some cases without playing at all. So it's not just a matter of getting LeBron and AD out there and rolling the ball out and dominating the way they did in that weekend in March. As Pelinka points out, there is a lot more to this.
We have put a ton of thought into the mental part of this journey. It is going to be as much of a physical grind as it is going to be a mental grind. And I think the mental component might even be more paramount. And so, yes, we have mental wellness people on staff here, and we've been working hard with them on developing a protocol to address some of the concerns that are going to come up from an extended time away from family or an extended time living in a city that's not your home.
All right. So initially, when that plan was announced, it might have been easy for fans to think it's going to be easier than a normal postseason. You know, you get to stay at a resort for a few months, play some golf, play some ping pong. No doubles, but ping pong. And you hang out. It'll be like being on a cruise ship without the water or the boat. But then think about this. Think about being on a cruise ship for 3 months or more. Like, I don't care how much ping pong they let you play. That's going to get pretty old. That ship will get old and boring and confining. really old. So it's going to feel like you're trapped, and it's going to be a mental grind. And the team that succeeds doesn't just need talent and health. They need toughness, mental and physical toughness both. You can see why a lot of guys might not be down, might not be into this. But I know one guy who is. I'm not talking about LeBron. I'm not talking about AD. I'm talking about Alex Caruso. Because if I could, I would talk about Alex Caruso every single day, all day. Because when we're talking about Alex Caruso, we're talking about a guy who went undrafted. We're talking about a guy who played for the 76ers in Summer League, then went to OKC, then joined the Lakers Summer League team the following year. He was a two-way player, and now he's a straight legend. And as he told ESPN, he's ready for this. In fact, he says he's made for this moment.
For me, I'm looking forward to it just because I think I thrive in situations like that where you got to get gritty and you kind of have to tough it out, you know, stuff that's not status quo and it's not normal.
Hell yeah. Like, he's not complaining. He's not afraid of it. In fact, he wants it. If it sounds like I'm getting fired up talking about Alex Caruso, it's because I'm getting fired up talking about Alex Caruso. I love this guy. When you're grinding it out for the South Bay Lakers, playing in tiny gyms around the country, going to Disney with the LA Lakers is an improvement, no matter what.
Obviously, I'm not looking forward to the situation and being hot and humid in Orlando and not seeing my family for that long of a time. But, you know, given the challenge, I'm kind of ready for it.
And again, he didn't say I'm not looking forward to going to the bubble and having to do without tail for 3 weeks. It's not what he said. What he did imply was, all you other players who were drafted and went straight into the league, you think challenging situations are your ally? Like, you accepted a challenging situation? Yeah, I'm not accepting it, man. I want it. I need it. I was born in it. I'm built for it. This is a guy who does stuff like this.
Rondo, three up high and off the ball. Caruso parachutes in. You cannot stop him. You can only hope to contain him.
Exactly. And he also does stuff like this.
LeBron gets it right back to Danny Green. Behind the back to Green. On its way. Does not go down. Oh, the Caruso! The final slam!
My man is a straight freak.
Got it out to Caldwell Pope. Caruso! Oh, you didn't know he had that in his bag, did you?
I did. And if you think that I was looking for yet another reason to roll my Alex Caruso montage, you're damn right I was. And you should be too, because we all need more of this guy right now in our lives. And from the sounds of it, we're about to get some, and it could be the best thing ever. Because as he declared last night, quote, the best for me is years to come. Hell yes. You know what, Laker fans? You have my permission. Break out that car flag. Hang it from your car. Break it out right now. Yes, Avery Bradley is a big loss. Yes, you might not have Dwight Howard. Yes, the Clippers are a beast and a threat, and so are the Bucks. But the Lakers still have LeBron. The Lakers still have AD. And to me, just as importantly, they still have AC, Alex freaking Caruso, who wants this. He needs this. He's built for this. This is not an inconvenience for him. This is not a drag for him. He thrives. The tougher it is, the better he is. He was built for it. And the best is yet to come. I'm still riding with the Lakers.
The Caruso!
I'm still riding with the Lakers. ATP. Let's do this really quickly. The ladies are dominating the ATP. Hey, Romy, what sort of wildlife do you see on your hikes? Thanks, Nikki. I see the same things every single day. Like literally thousands of rabbits, a few squirrels, and I'm good to see a snake a few times a week. I got a video of one that I put up and I took down, but I still have it. There's a lot of snakes in the hills where I hike. Mostly rabbits, some squirrel, and a few snakes. Scary snakes, man. Big ass snakes. Hi, Jim. With your entire family starting vacation without you, what do you do for dinner every night? Postmates? Cook for yourself? Or do you have a personal chef making those meals? Thanks, Bella B in Calgary. Great question. All right, so I do have some pre-made meals that I sometimes actually eat. But like I said yesterday, my drill yesterday was I hit my Peloton for 45 minutes. I'm trying to do a brick. Hawk and I have been talking about the brick. You know, back-to-back workouts. You try and double up. I've been trying to double up on my cardio. So I hit the Peloton, and then I hit my hike. And the reason I bring that up is my dinner was as follows. I kind of skipped lunch. Not the smartest move yesterday. Skip lunch, hit the back-to-back cardio, which went to over 1,000 calories burned. Got a gigantic protein shake. Smashed it. Felt like that was not good enough. And then had a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. And man, that put me out. That was my dinner. A gigantic smoothie, protein shake, and a normal-sized PB&J. Not great choices. A brick workout is the stacking of two disciplines during the same workout, one after the other, with minimal to no interruption in between. Quote, as you switch modes of exercise, your body needs to effectively and efficiently prepare for the next demand while recovering from the previous exercise demand. So it's pretty intense. And I said to Adam, we were talking about it, I'm like, do I get the benefit of the brick if I space them out? He said, no. To quote Hawk, my new guru of exercise, two workouts is still a good thing, obviously, but better if they're done back to back. So to answer your question, Bella, a little bit of the above, all of the above, pre-made, I make for myself, I do order out, or I just kind of punt and go gigantic smoothie and PB&J, which seemed like a good idea at the time. When we return, actor Scott Eastwood is my guest. I do owe you a sports update. And I make good on everything I owe, so here it is. I do want to remind you that we do have a podcast, which will be live after the program. We have to finish producing it, but then we will shoot it out. Episode 136, NBAer Andre Iguodala. Covers a lot of ground. The return of the league. He's a big tech guy. We talk some golf and more. He's got some great stories too. Andre Iguodala, that's coming up after the show today. We are efforting actor Scott Eastwood, who I will have momentarily. And I want to give you one more telephone number. Write this number down. Use it because we use your voicemail still on our podcast. This telephone number is a direct dial to us. If it goes to voicemail, leave a message. If it's a good message, we will use it in the podcast. If it's a terrible message, we will use it in the podcast. That phone number is 949-385-0447. Area code 949-385-0447. All right. With that in mind, as promised, we're joined right now by an actor whose credits include Pacific Rim, Uprising, The Fate of the Future, Suicide Squad, and more. He is the co-founder of Made Here brand. He is the star of The Outpost. That drops in theaters and will also be on demand on Friday. We are joined by actor Scott Eastwood. Scott, great to have you on. How are you?
Hey, Jim. How you doing?
Good, bud. How about you?
You know, I'm hanging out in my Uggs and my boxers today. You know, it's a good day.
I was going to say, that's a good day. Good. Good to hear it.
Great right, day.
So the movie, that is a great day. The movie, Scott, is based on Jake Tapper's best-selling book, The Outpost, An Untold Story of American Valor. How did you first hear about that project, and why was that something that you wanted to get involved with?
Well, I got to give credit to the director for that one. That's Rod Laurie, our director. He convinced me to do it. I actually wasn't aware of the story. I never heard of it. And he came to me and said, I want you to play Clint Romachet, this man who had received a Congressional Medal of Honor. And, you know, as I sort of started to unearth the story and do some research, I realized it was a pretty powerful story and something that needed to be told.
Talking to Scott Eastwood. Scott, in terms of that story, it's a story of 53 soldiers who were attacked by insurgents at Camp Keating in Afghanistan. Clint Romachet himself described the location, quote, as the most remote, precarious, and tactically screwed combat outpost in all of Afghanistan. So for those who are not familiar with that battle, exactly what happened?
Sure, yeah. It's like you said. I mean, it was screwed from the get-go. You know, it was something that was overlooked by the war machine. It was pointed out, but never fixed. You know, it was something that was really deemed the indefensible. And 53 soldiers were asked to defend this outpost. And on October 3rd in 2009, it was attacked by over 400 Taliban insurgents. And it was just an incredible firefight that lasted for, you know, almost 24 hours. And with no real air support, they fended them off, and eight men paid the ultimate sacrifice. Over 27, I think, were wounded. There were, you know, not only were there two Congressional Medal of Honors given that day, but there were over 23 or 24 Purple Hearts given out. So it was the battle was just unlike anything we've seen.
Actor Scott Eastwood is my guest. You know, in terms of those awards, like Romichet was later awarded that Medal of Honor. So I'm curious, what's it like to portray a real hero? And is there a heavy responsibility that comes along with that?
Yeah. You know, lot of responsibility that comes with it. Not only to portray him accurately and kind of nail that part, but also because you're honoring men who died, and you're also representing our military and people who fight, you know, today, and who are out there today fighting for our freedoms.
We're talking to Scott Eastwood, and that movie's going to drop soon. You know, then you have veterans of the battle, and they're involved in the film, both as actors and technical advisors. What did you learn from working with them? What was that like?
Working with the veterans is always a really great experience, you know, hearing firsthand their stories and being able to be around them and to learn without that, it makes it real tough, you know, and it just always reminds you of the gravity daily of what they went through. And I think really humbles everyone when they come to work every day to tell the story.
We're talking to Scott Eastwood. Scott, I would imagine a role like that probably requires a certain physicality, but that's not something you're not accustomed to. As an example, there's a lot of physicality in a lot of your roles. A few years back, you and Kevin Hart went to training camp with the LA Rams for a day. What was that experience like?
Kevin and I... we got our asses kicked. There's no other way to say that.
Right.
Those guys are the real deal. We're just actors. So we have really no place being on that field.
Thing is, I mean, you're actors that take care of yourselves, but then that's a different breed altogether. I mean, you're out there trying to do football things, though, right? Like, there's catching punts. A lot of people seem to think that's pretty easy to do. Actually, how challenging is that? You did it.
It's incredibly challenging. You don't realize, you know, if you're putting the ball with your buddies on the beach or in the backyard or on a field somewhere, you don't really know what it's like, because the pros, they're on a whole nother level of what a punt is. I mean, it's got to feel like at least twice or three times as high as you're used to catching, and having those guys running towards you, 240 pounds of man, just on their way to destroy you is not something you want.
No, none of us want that. Actor Scott Eastwood's joining us. I mean, Scott, so people are clear, though. You're not just some dude who jumped off the couch, jogged around with an NFL team for a day. You told Men's Health of your usual morning routine, which is wake up, jump in a sauna, take a cold shower, or jump in a cold pool. Now, help me with this. I know a lot of people feel really strongly about doing something cold in the morning. What's the benefit to that? Why do you do that?
I think it just shocks you. It gets you immediately out of your lethargic state in the morning. Instead of kind of a long, drawn-out morning where you need to get to coffee and you need to start to move and then kind of shuffle around the house, you just speed up through that whole process. And not only that, the cold water is great for you. It calms down inflammation. If you're dealing with ailments or any injuries, you're going to calm down inflammation, and you're going to get the day going right away.
I like it. Hey, before you go, Scott, also, you've trained in jiu-jitsu. This is not easy to do at all. I've told the story that I worked out with some MMA guys, and I had one guy in particular where I'd be on the mat, and I just wasn't really enjoying it. And he's like, hey, man, you better get comfortable down here, because if the fight ever goes down there in the street, you're a dead man. And my response was, yeah, I'm not really comfortable. I quit. You know, like any champ would, I quit. Anyway, you've trained in jiu-jitsu. This is not easy. What was your takeaway from that, both from a physical and mental standpoint?
Oh, I mean, look, the training never ends. The takeaway is it's an incredible sport that humbles you daily. No matter what level you're at, you're continually being humbled, and that's what's so great about it. It's something that I think checks people's egos and makes you a better person. In my life, I know it has. It shows you that you're not as great as you think you are, or you know, it really checks you, and it to be good at it, you've got to really continue to do it, and it's just tough.
I think you're right. I think that's a great description. It humbles you. It absolutely humbles you. I also mentioned off the top that you are the co-founder of Made Here Brand. There are a lot of different projects, a lot of different brands that you might be involved with. How did you first get involved in that?
This one was one that was that meant a lot to me. A few years ago, my business partner and I decided to really make a go at it. We really wanted to bring manufacturing back home. We have incredible manufacturing capability here in this country. We have had one, and I think we just lost our way a little. And, we decided that we needed to make things cheaper just to have things cheaper, and I don't think we need to do that. We want to celebrate American workers and embrace a localism, embrace knowing where your goods are made from, supporting your neighbors, supporting the people in your community, and that's what we're trying to do.
Scott Eastwood is the star of The Outpost, that comes out in theaters and on demand on Friday. So one final thought, like one of the things that seems to come up quite a bit from people who've worked with you is the fact that you're constantly looking to learn and improve. So as an example, how much have you grown as an actor since you started, or even in the past few years alone?
Yeah, I think I've grown. I don't know how to quantify that exactly. I think that it's like jiu-jitsu. It's the constant evolution. It's a constant growing process. It's constant. It's like anything you do for many, many years. You're constantly learning, and then kind of when you think you kind of have it figured out, you get smacked down, and you realize you don't know as much as you thought, and I think that's a good thing. That's a humbling thing, and you're just learning every day.
So what's the plan? What's the approach? As an example, do you have a plan in mind for your career and how you'd like it to go, or basically do you just go project by project, day by day, and just try not to overthink it?
You can't overthink it. You got to follow your gut, first and foremost. You can't there's so many things in this world that are out of your control. All you can control is the decisions you make. If you show up, you work hard, if you're kind to other people and you're good to people, and you take it day by day, and you can manifest things. I think you can visualize and manifest things and meditate on things, and do things to hopefully create those things into existence. But there's a lot of stuff you can't control, so you just control what you can.
I get it. He's an actor, he's a producer, and The Outpost is coming out in both theaters and on demand on Friday. Scott Eastwood, my guest. Scott, great to have you on. Appreciate the conversation. Nice to talk to you, bro.
Shame. Thanks for having me, partner.
Have a great day. Scott Eastwood. I like that. I like that a lot. Actors inherently are so interesting to me when they start talking about their process and their approach and the mindset, especially in taking on a really heavy role like that. That was fun. Got to change up on you now during the pandemic. And the sports angle was he and Kevin Hart trained with the Rams for a day and said, man, we got our asses kicked. Now we are done.
Now I'm done.
I told you it would be a good day, and it is. My thanks to Scott Eastwood, actor, Troy Weaver, Pistons GM, David Shaw, and football coach at Stanford. We're still booking strong. I've got a podcast to push out in the next hour or so with Andre Iguodala. Make sure you look for that. If you're already subscribed, it will find you. If not, you want to subscribe, so you don't have to go looking for it. Just do that. The XR4TI is showing up big yet again. Clones, nice job. Finish strong this week. I'm off for the next 2 weeks after Friday, so two more shows. Let's get it. Thanks for listening. See you then. Have a great day.